Well, hello, and welcome to the very first Far Off Places podcast. I'm Annie Rutherford, I'm one of the editors at the magazine, and I'm delighted to introduce a fantastic podcast to start us off today. Far Off Places is a magazine of written whimsy featuring poetry and short prose, which is enchanting, occasionally repelling, and always unexpected. Today we'll be hearing a sneak preview of our second issue on the theme of the back of beyond with At Yesnaby by DJ Mack, read by Sian Fidimore. The back of beyond will be released at the end of June, so don't go away. But until then, if you like what you hear, check out our website, fireoffplaces.org, where you can take a peek at our first issue on fairy tales retold. But for now, if you're sitting comfortably, then we'll begin.
At Yesnaby by DJ Mack, read by Sian Fidimore. This Orcadian quest was his first venture out of Canada since she'd gone. He had hopped from Halifax to London to Aberdeen and was now waiting to break through mist and vapour on the descent into Kirkwall. It seemed the cauliflower clouds wanted to smother the landscape. He saw only the briefest flash of dull green hill and grey sea before the plane bounced onto the licorice strip runway. As he came down the steps, the fingers of the wind plucked his knitted hat off his skull and took it tumbling over the tarmac. He had to break his journey again here because of the time, and it frustrated him. He had a yearning that only grew the closer he got to his goal. It penetrated more painfully than the fatigue that weeks of sleepless nights had gifted him. It was impossible to ignore. It was a drive. No, it was more than a drive. A coercion, perhaps, or a goad. In truth, it could not be separated from his sense of loss. The two things had come to be one and the same. At this time of year, darkness strode early into the day, and after a late lunch at the hotel, he went to bed, although once more he was denied a peaceful sleep. The wind sang mournfully from the fringes of the sea, suffusing and shaping his dreams. Primmy Scott was there. As always, she moved away from him, forward and then down into the earth, casting a look over her shoulder. He could not catch her. She slipped away beneath him. He woke at 4 a.m. with a sense of longing and urgency. He did not sleep again, thinking instead about the last trip they'd taken together. The last time they'd gone to the movies. The last time they'd made love. Later, on the taxi trip to Yesnaby, it seemed that daylight was not welcome in these islands. He felt that he was in a netherworld of silver-grey gloom with the sky stooping to kiss the waves. What was he doing here? What on earth was he doing here? Primmy was gone. She would not be found in this forsaken place. It was completely the wrong time of year, and he had set himself an impossible task. In the end, he accepted it did not matter. Choice had long since abandoned him. The driver took him as close as he could to the grassland that led to the hard lip of the coast, where sandstone walls plummeted to surf. He still had a mile or so to walk, and it felt as if the weather were permeating into his marrow through the pores in his skin. He wondered if this might be the most desolate place on the planet. The wind and the sea were in bitter competition, drowning out the sound of his hot breath and the sigh of his feet on the peaty sheep track. In his backpack were two of Primmy's botanical books. She had ringed the pages herself years ago. She had felt an affinity, a powerful connection with her namesake. He didn't know why he had bothered to pack the texts. The image of what he was looking for was seared into his memory like a brand. He had thought of nothing else for months. The only help he needed now was his map, and despite the remonstrations of the gale, he managed to work out that he was somewhere close. Abruptly, he fell to his knees, as if contemplating prayer. But rather than turn his head to the jagged sky, he hunched forward. He found his magnifying glass in his pocket and started his quest. The light was poor and tears from the elements obscured his view, but he was not deterred. The search was harder still because in February there were no petals, no bloom, and no proud stalk. He had to recognise leaves pressed flat into soil and obscured by blunted blades of grass. This required concentration. The fatigue that had bound itself into his bones was his mind's enemy. Countless sleepless nights, his loss of appetite and the raw, festering wound of despondency felt like obstacles. Why was he finding it so hard to focus? He realised he was panting, hungry for air or something else. He moved forward slowly, a few inches at a time. His gloves were not helping, so he put them to one side. The wind made short work of them. Water from the weeping earth bled into his jeans, and within minutes he began to shiver. An hour or so later he had moved through shivering into a different place where the cold did not seem to matter so much. Indeed, he was feverish in his urgency. He was racing against the elements, racing against time. As he progressed, he pressed his face closer to the eager earth, his body flatter. He felt encumbered by his boots and his anorak, tied down by his jeans and sweater. They were blocking him. He began to tear at them. He scratched at the tight vegetation, which clung hard to the peat. His nails became split, then ragged. His hands were shovels, his fingers rakes. His face was painted in browns and reds and greys. There was a frenzy of movement, his limbs lacerating the landscape, and then a pause. He raised a fist to the heavens. Clutched within it was a tiny rosette made up of the deeply veined oval leaves of Primula scotica. Triumphant and ecstatic, he pushed his spent torso down once more into the grass, into the soil, as if he would merge with it, as if it would become his welcoming tomb. He gave himself to the earth, sprawled there, suddenly still. His breath began to ebb. The wind hushed. As sleep stole in to take him, he could smell the coarse dark odour of broken loam, and somewhere on its margins, he could smell her hair. DJ Mac footers with an itchy, scratchy pen in an Edinburgh garret in the odd moments when the bewilderment of life fades. Proud member of the Binge Inkers writing group, he meanders, rants, muses and chortles on djmac.co.uk. He likes to look for humour in the darkness, or darkness in the humour, in order to craft good writing. Observers hope that someday, with the wind behind him, he may just yet succeed.
That was At Yesnaby by DJ Mac, read by Sian Fidema. Many thanks to Sian for her reading, we hugely enjoyed it. And thanks too to Ian Sharman for sound production and to Gerdenak for the music. Sadly, that's us for today, folks, but thanks for listening. Fare thee well, but not goodbye, for we'll be back in a week with more written whimsy. Until then, check out our website, faroffplaces.org, or browse a copy of our first issue with some disturbing fairy tales retold, including a startling take on Snow White by DJ Mac himself. And if what you've heard has tickled your fancy, then why not pick up a pen and start scribbling? We're currently accepting submissions for our third issue on the theme of Under the Bed. If you've got any queries, bad jokes, or world-shattering revelations, then follow us on Twitter, at Far Off Places, and find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. We're pretty social folk. Until then, good night. And good luck.